This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Be heard weekdays at 5 p.m. KPFT Houston.
There's a place in your heart nobody's been. Take me there. Things nobody knows, not even your friends. Take me there. Tell me about your mama, your daddy, your hometown.
This is KPFT Houston, After Hours, and the first song we're playing here is for Lisa.
She has a thing for men who love men. They just want to be her friend. She has a thing for friend in high school stole her heart away. The damage was already done when she found out he was gay. She tried to understand that it would never work. She felt like she'd been deceived and he felt like a jerk. She has a thing for men. They just wanna be her friend. She has a thing for men who love men. She falls in love with them. Her oldest friend in college came out to her one day. But neither of them listened to a word he had to say. They put away his fantasies and shut the closet door. His lips said, I love you, but his eyes said, I need more. And she has a thing for men who love men. They just want to be her friend. Understand why she thinks she needs a man, and nobody knows just why she can never find a guy. And she doesn't understand why she thinks she needs a man, and nobody knows just why she can never find a guy. One day she met a woman no time to refuse or to explain that she was straight. Courted like a schoolgirl, treated equal like a friend. She finally found the love that she'd been looking for in men. And now she understands that she doesn't need a man. Why she's not looking for a guy. And now she understands that she doesn't need a man. And nobody knows just why she's not looking for a guy. And now she understands that she doesn't need a man. And nobody knows just why she's not looking for a guy. And now she understands that she doesn't need a man.
following program may...
What the hell was that boring stuff? This is what we're. This is what you're expecting.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music dear to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
It's 2 a.m. on the East Coast, 11 p.m. on the West Coast. And oh my God, I've killed Merlin. I'm a bastard. And over in England, the churches are getting ready to hold a petition drive because they have trying to remove Professor Dumbledore as headmaster of Hogwarts Academy since it's recently been discovered he's a homosexual.
Oh my God, no.
But it's 1 a.m. It's the Throbbing Heart of Montrose. This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harrison. I will be your producer for this evening.
Virgin's here. Yay.
Everyone's here but Jimmy.
Aww. Let's give a shout out to Jimmy.
And if you couldn't figure that out by the opening song, then hey.
So what other things on the forbidden list do you have planned?
I don't know yet.
He hasn't. Thought that far
I haven't
ahead.
Thought that far ahead. I mean, my God.
Who does?
Let's remember what show this is.
there it is.
What the hell? It's all on.
So what?
Yeah, I can't be left alone in the studio, so I asked for a sidekick and...
Friends.
You got a room full.
And welcome to the new reality show, So You Think You Can Be a Sidekick.
You know, there's...
I'll be Chris's sidekick.
There's only two reality shows that I'll even bother to watch.
And they are?
Biggest Loser and home makeover thing with Ty Penn.
Extreme Home Makeover.
I really like that show because, I mean, at least it actually does something for somebody's lives, you know, for a family.
Increase the sales of Kleenex tissues.
Yeah, that too.
I was watching a reality show earlier this evening.
Yeah, for two reasons, but anyway.
I was watching a reality show earlier today on the reality station.
Mm.
Yes, they've come up with a cable network
Fox
of all
reality, yes, I remember.
Wasn't that one that you liked?
Somebody slit my veins now.
Oh, this is a good one. It's appropriate for Halloween as they pick the next Elvira.
Oh, the next Elvira? What? Do you think she's getting a little long in the tooth?
It's so funny. She's there and she has two Manviras as her judges with her.
Okay.
And so they had this huge casting call on the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Whittled it down to the 20 people they showed on the show, and then they brought it down to 13.
Mm-hmm.
And so her little catchphrase was if they were selected to be one of the 13, it was, welcome to my nightmare.
Yeah.
And if you were not going on, it was, you may rest in peace. And she threw this little switch, and a lightning bolt went out to them, and there's the women... I got to tell you this way, they're dedicated to Elvira because they were told, you know, if it says rest in peace, you got to go, ah! So then the lightning bolt hit her, she turned to a skeleton, then turned to dust.
Do you know, along the vampire theme, do you know that Al Lewis was once almost denied playing the character of Grandpa in later shows because they thought he was too old to play Grandpa? To which I say, exactly how old is too old to play a 400-year-old vampire?
I think he was a little old to play Grandpa when he was actually playing
Grandpa.
He was a little too old to be doing porn later, I understand.
Ooh. Oh. That's under the Way Too Much Information Act.
Yeah. And so Grandpa Al Lewis, former member of a Pacifica family. Mm. He actually did a show up at WBAI.
Yeah.
Mm. We started off the show with classic music, Romanofsky and Phillips. And that was dedicated to Lisa from the other show. She Has a Thing for Men Who Love Men.
Oh, I love me some men.
They don't love you back, though, honey.
Well, since she did her show on fags and fag hags.
Yeah. I was warned about that show earlier today. Somebody told me about what the subject was.
Yeah, she was saying the first rule is, you know, it's all about the fag. I told her the second rule is the fag hag has to get the fag laid.
There you go. That's the second rule. Absolutely.
I didn't know that was a rule.
Yeah.
So the reason why you're not doing your job, Virgin.
Oh, and if the fag hag is going to bring their boyfriend with them, they should not get upset when the other fags hit on the boyfriend because, well, guess what? We can't all tell who are the fags and who aren't.
Right. So your role changes. You're no longer girlfriend. You're camera operator number one. The second selection was from the Bootlickers, and the song was HWC. That's how it's listed on the CD, and that's what I'm sticking with.
Sticking anyway.
Yeah.
Oh God, I hate when I get those Freudian slips. I wasn't even thinking that.
Pervert.
Right.
A dirty mind is a terrible thing to waste.
All right. Let's see. Let me try and do the community calendar stuff. By the way, Jimmy is not here tonight. He is. Entombment on the throne. Enthronement. Yeah, that's
enthronement.
Entombment is later, honey. Anyway, much later.
Much, much later.
That's the Empire. The Imperial Court of Houston, Space City Empire, is elevating their Emperor and Empress elect to Emperor and Empress status. And for how late it is, and knowing the Empress,
they're having a gay old time right now, aren't
well,
they?
Well, you know, there was a 5-hour open bar, and
oh my God.
No, Jimmy does not drink.
The Emperor and Empress may be under the table. They may be under the throne by now, but okay.
Or christening it.
Or head in the throne.
Or head in the throne.
All right.
But yes, Jimmy does not drink, so.
There's some of us here that make up for him.
Sorry, Jimmy. Hey.
Fire Dancer Steak Night. Proceeds benefit Baring Omega's Housing Assistance Program. Fire Dancers of Houston and Baring Omega Community Services are hosting Fire Dancer Steak Night. For $15, you get steak. Grills will be provided for you to cook it to your liking. Salad and baked potato with all the fixings.
Oh.
And the opportunity to mix and mingle with supporters of Baring Omega community.
Mm-hmm.
Where else for, you know, I'm going to tack this on for $15 and you get meat on the back patio of the Ripcord.
That's a good one, Chris.
Boy.
And it's not
it
even
never
food.
Cost that much before.
Well, you know, when the Houston, Big Man's called to Houston, they have, you can get meat between two buns for $6. So, hey, you know.
No, we're not that expensive. if you're interested
and Baring Omega is still a very important
yes they are
organization.
If you're interested in attending this event, please RSVP to Carrie Pope by Tuesday so they have to make sure they have enough food. The event is Wednesday, October 24th from 5:30 to 8 at the Ripcord, 715 Fairview. Carrie Pope you can contact at cpope@baringomega.org.
I have to say that if you think that this crisis is over, I still got friends coming to me, coming up positive. And here we are, 26 years in.
Yeah.
You know?
Guava Lamp on Thursday, October 25th, welcomes Eric Hyman for one night. It's a magnificent concert you don't want to miss, performing songs from his latest album, There's Gotta Be Something. There is no cover, and he's having a special musical surprise guest. That's Thursday, October 25th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Guava Lamp, 570 Wall Drive at Allen Parkway.
Musical surprise guest at the Guava Lamp would be somebody who could actually sing as opposed to lip sync.
Well, Eric Hyman is a performer. I think we've got a CD of his. We'll play some of his later.
Cool.
But I know what he's into.
What else we got going on?
I got to queue up the stuff so I can give you the information for where else Eric Hyman is performing.
Oh, the local area?
Uh-huh. He's going to be down in Galveston.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
And they have quite a scene down there now.
Well, it's coming up for Galveston Gay Pride.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Next weekend.
Next weekend, right?
Something like that. As soon as
there's enough people left on Galveston to have their own pride thingy? Yay.
One or two.
Yay.
Just got to remember where in the world I have that email saved.
How many gay bars are there left on Galveston?
Quite a bit.
They keep recycling people.
The only time I ever see Galveston anymore is for Dickens on the Strand. So I always go as Don.
Dickens on the Strand?
Yeah.
Don?
Yeah. Don We Now. Don We Now.
Don't you do that for Renaissance too?
Yeah, no.
No, he takes the holly off of his hat.
I will have you know that I no longer own my Christmas top hat. I gave it to somebody last Christmas for Christmas.
Oh, here it is. Galveston Island Pride Festival. Just gotta find Tim's email. Open.
It's in there somewhere.
Open.
This is what happens. Jimmy's one who usually gets all the stuff prepared and is talking, and I'm sitting here playing on the computer. Galveston Pride Festival, October 26th through the 28th. It starts off on Friday at the Pink Dolphin, Saturday the street party at Sangerfest Park, Saturday night a costume party at the Undercurrent, Sunday, a beach party at the Third Coast Beach Bar.
Cool.
I see a Halloween theme. Working that close to the
theme.
There should be
on Saturday, October 27th, from noon to 9 at Sangerfest Park, special guest star Paper Mache was singing her number one hit Dive Into the Pool from Queer as Folk.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Featuring Eric Hyman and Josh Duffy, with special appearances by DJ Special K, DJ Chris Allen, DJ Neil Fogo, and Paige Lewis from Austin. For more information, go to galvestonpride.org.
Yay.
Tickets are still available for Sing for the Cure with the Bayou City Chorale. A unique evening of music will be performed at Jones Hall on October 23rd, 2007 at 7:30. Daddy Rose and Boy Drew are both singers in the stirring and entertaining evening of music dedicated to the struggles and victories in the fight against breast cancer. Hosted by Deborah Duncan of Channel 11's Morning News, Sing for the Cure looks at the fight against breast cancer from all angles. Tickets are $30, $50, and $100. You can get them at 713-521-SING or at BayouCityPerformingArts.com.
I had to take a major detour around a certain marathon, speaking of breast cancer and such things, just to get to the Renaissance Festival a couple of weekends back. I've never, the last time I saw that much pink, it was at a
that's for
Queer Nation. it was at one of Jimmy's garage sales.
Unhinged Productions is holding a Duke and Duchess of Darkness contest on October 27th at Rich's. They're in need of contestants to run for Duke and Duchess. We ask that all contestants be there by 3 o'clock. The event starts at 4. Winners will receive a sash and crown and will hold the title for 1 year. The contestants were ones who raised the winner is the one who raises the most money during the contest. Each contestant will perform 3 numbers, one per set, not to exceed 5 minutes each. All the money will be total, and the contestant that raises the most money will be crowned the Duke of Darkness and the Duchess of Darkness.
For some reason, Sweet Little Transvestite comes to mind. But anyhow.
This, I guess, is benefiting Legacy Community Health Services. Let's see. Jimmy right now, where's Jimmy at? According to this thing, Well, his stuff's too late for this, but he's over at Enthrone. Well, tomorrow, the Imperial Court of Houston Space City Empire. No, that was last week.
Okay.
Because Jimmy doesn't know how to do this. Crumple up the paper and go like that. Sweet Mama Cotton, coming to a Kroger near you in the Woodlands.
We know Jimmy doesn't know how to throw things away. Some of the candy he brings in is from last Halloween.
Is that funny? From when he went trick-or-treating?
Yeah, from when he went trick-or-treating.
Honey.
At 10.
The closest he does to that is tricking treats. Or treating tricks.
Oh, goodness.
Just a reminder that on Sunday, October 21st, the PWA First Holiday Halloween Party will be at the BRB. From 7 till whenever. There will be pumpkins acution.
Pumps? Pumpkin. Mm-hmm. Ooh, somebody really reached for that one.
Somebody stuttered on the C. There'll be a show, a pumpkin carving demo on the back patio, and costume contest for a $100 cash prize. PWA will be purchasing the pumpkins, or you can bring your own.
I love making jack-o'-lanterns. They're fun.
The BRB, pumpkins are dropped off the BRB from 3 to 5. Like I said, it starts at 7.
You murder a pumpkin.
BRB is on Brazos, over by the Big Rabbit. That's tomorrow, so there.
I no longer keep a jack-o'-lantern because my neighbors keep using mine every year for a garbage can. So.
Aww. That's nice of them.
Could be worse.
How's that?
Commode.
Commode.
Yeah.
Survey says.
Oh. So that was you.
Bastard. Yeah, but the candle's a bitch. That's fun.
Hey, at least my neighbors across from me have gotten into the same spirit as I have as far as decorating. Even their window is done up with lights and skeletons and stuff, too.
Well, mine's all covered in cobwebs and just because I don't clean. The Houston Women's Festival returns to the beautiful Jones Plaza downtown. Oh, scratch that. It's already happened.
Next!
Next. The phone already happened.
He didn't even get to that one. It's like, whoa, look.
These are old stuff. I was page 2. All right, that's it of the calendar of events.
Yay.
For more information on a lot of these events, the best source to go to is join the Louis Weekend Yahoo group for a lot of the organizations that put on these events. You can find the stuff there.
Well, I guess I'll be joining that group,
then.
You'll fit in.
Stream close up.
So well.
Hey, if I'm able to fit in, he should be able to, you know.
Now.
The doors are wide.
Please use the double doors in the back.
That was not a size remark.
Yeah, it was from me.
I'm not fat. I'm just healthy.
No. I like the one comic.
Healthy.
I like the one comic who says it's there. He's fluffy.
Yes, Gabriel Iglesias. One of my favorites.
Oh, that was
amazing. He's actually 5 degrees.
Well, Virgin is kind of fluffy too.
All right, so. I think that's it on that. Christopher's here, right? So
no, bad on virgin.
You're just virgin. You're just undernourished if you're a sumo wrestler.
Maybe a mud wrestler, but you know.
Ooh.
Sound now?
No.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'm kicking out because it's coming up time for Black on Black.
Time, okay. Black and Black, and we go away now.
We did all the stupid stuff we got done faster than when Jimmy's here.
Whoa.
Whoa.
No, you're really hoping Jimmy didn't hear that.
Hear what?
You can go to the archive at kpft.org. There's that little saying about, you know, when you've got nothing to lose.
Well, let's all go outside.
So, let's play a little song here and get ready for the Black on Black segment. For a lot of people, this is homecoming weekend, so I think this is kind of an appropriate song, if I can figure out which number to turn that to. Let's go with little Kevin Cahoon with Could I Have This Dance? This is After Hours.
man for the rest of my life. Would you be my partner every night? When we're together it feels so right. Could I have this dance for the rest of my life? When I held you close, tell me, as we moved together, I knew forever you're all I'll ever need. Yeah, yeah. Could I have this there for the rest of my life? Would you be my partner?
Kevin Cahoon with Can I Have This Dance? For all the twinks out there heading off for just getting out from homecoming dances and such. This is After Hours. It's time for our Black on Black segment. So, of course, you have to hear this.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist. And know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed. See a real life conspiracy. Sign your name on a blacklist. And know this, it's American history.
Thank you for joining me on Black on Black. This morning, I am Christopher Evans, your host. And in the studio, I have two very special guests. One of them is my godson, and the other is my godson's best friend. And they've been more than elated to join me, and I certainly thank them for joining me at this early hour. So if you two want to introduce yourselves, you can. We'll start with you, Ashlyn, first.
Hello again. This is Ashlyn Smith saying hello once again. Nice to be on the show. Thank you, Mr. Christopher, for bringing me back.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Christopher, for having me on your show. My name's Yul Hubbard, and right now I know my fiance is listening, so hi.
So they have decided to join me. I thought what would be interesting is I've known Ashlyn since how old were you when I first met you?
12, 13, one of those ages.
12 or 13 years old. And you, I believe you were around,
I was 14
when I first met you. And what has happened is that these two young men have certainly grown up and come into their own, and they are currently making the transition from childhood to manhood. So I certainly thought it would be interesting to talk to them concerning what that transition is like for a young African American male. So we have a couple of questions, but it may just turn into a roundtable discussion of sorts. But what we're going to start off with is, what is your definition at your age right now of manhood, as far as you know it?
Well, you can go first.
All right. My definition of manhood would actually be for a young man, not to his full potential. I'd have to say as it being halfway there.
Okay.
Just learning the knowledge of being a man right now, and we'll be able to put it to use when he's older.
Okay. So at what age do you think men reach their full stage or status of manhood?
I would actually say becoming a man, it's not an age, it's basically a state of mind.
Okay.
So you can be 15 years old and you can act, you can have the mindset of a full-fledged adult, as they like to say, but okay. You're still stuck in the age of a 15-year-old.
Okay.
And I totally agree with that, because we've all been put in certain situations to where we've had to be older than what we are, or think older than what we are.
Okay.
And we all know or have heard of someone that is over the ages of 21 that still don't carry themselves as an adult.
Okay. So what is masculinity to you at this age right now?
That's difficult.
Because there is a difference between manhood and masculinity.
Excuse me today, but...
It's early.
Yes. But that in itself is, to me, being comfortable with your whole self, everything that is about you.
Okay.
And yes, that does include, because everybody has some of it, that part of you that is feminine. All of that which is in you and being comfortable with all of that is masculinity.
Okay. Well, you all can jump in. I'm going to give you some information, and then you can process it, and we may even have to come back to it later on. At 36, whoa, kicking on the door of 40, I'm going to tell you right now that manhood is nothing more than an image. That's all manhood is. It's an image. No, I'm sorry. I have that backwards. Masculinity is nothing more than an image. That's all masculinity is an image. Manhood is all about your integrity, who you are as a man, your loyalty, your ability to be trustworthy, your ability to make a commitment to your community and stick to that. It is, manhood is your word. It's who you are. It's what people experience when they deal with you. It's what people experience when they deal with you. Your masculinity is nothing but the image that you portray to people as you live your day-to-day life. It's, masculinity is all about how you walk and how you talk. And as we know, what do you think about the hip-hop culture identifies more readily for the black community what masculinity is supposed to be? 50 Cent, T.I., the hip-hop culture has relegated to the black community that this is what a man is supposed to be. This is what masculinity is supposed to look like, because we well know that what's masculine to a Caucasian woman may not be masculine to an African-American woman or to an Asian woman. So masculinity depends on the culture that you are in. If you are in a Caucasian culture, masculinity can be defined, or most definitely is defined, as something different from the black community. So masculinity is all about your image, and manhood is about your integrity. So with that said, was that your idea of what the two was, or is it something different, or can you see what I'm talking about?
I can definitely see what you're talking about, and I feel where you're coming from about it being a image.
Okay.
And as far as the hip-hop culture goes, I believe that they portray the wrong image.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I say that because a lot of young men, including myself at times, wear our pants real baggy, like real low, below our underwear line or our waist.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I didn't do it. And I started to fall into doing it. And then I heard where that originated from. And it was from prison. And it was to let people know that, hey, you like men and you like to have sex with men. And I was like, then why are all these so-called thugs out there wearing their pants below their butt? And
okay,
it's crazy.
Well, let me update you on something. That's actually a two-part thing. Basically, really, the bottom line is why those pants are like that, and supposedly that style started in prison culture is because the clothes that they gave them were just too big. And just too big. The other part about that, about you belonging to someone in prison, or you being somebody's be. And that's still in debate whether or not it's really true. So I think depending on what part of the country you question men who have been incarcerated about that, and it's still up in debate. But the basic bottom line is just you went to prison and the clothes that they gave you were too big.
Okay.
So it's a fashion thing that stemmed from there. As young men right now, where did the biggest influence on your masculinity come from? How do you think that was formed for you?
I would actually say it was from my dad.
Okay.
And my dad kind of set real strong morals in for me.
Okay.
And it was always take pride in what you do. Take pride in your work. No matter if you're getting paid $5 an hour.
Okay.
Make it look like it's more.
Okay.
They'll appreciate you more. They'll see, oh, this guy can work.
Okay.
Take pride in your work. Take pride in yourself. And always, always stand up for yourself. Keep yourself straight.
Okay. So so you're saying that yours was your idea of masculinity or how you portray yourself in public and to other people was formed by your dad's standards.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Ashlyn, with you, without a consistent male role model in the home, where did yours come from?
Mine came from my mom, actually, and I took a bit or a piece of the puzzle from every male that came into my life for a long time.
Okay.
But most of it came from my mom because I was from a single parent household.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but a lot came, the other 10%, I should say, came from looking in the mirror.
Okay.
Every day, trying to see myself and where I wanted to go and what I wanted to be.
Okay.
And how I should form that.
Okay. What has the transition been like for you from childhood to manhood, either one of you?
Mine was real short. And last time I was on the air with you, I stated that before, but mine was real short.
Okay.
Not because I was coming from a single parent home, but where we were when I was being raised and the situations that we had to go through.
Okay.
My mom had a lot on her shoulders.
Okay.
And was like a leader in our community. Even though she never verbally said, oh, I want to be a leader. She was just a leader.
Okay.
And everybody flocked to her. And because she was a leader, she instilled in me to be a leader.
Okay.
And there were a lot of kids that just looked up to me and came to me with their problems. And I knew at that age that if I didn't find a way to steer myself in the right direction, then I wouldn't be able to steer them in the right direction.
Okay. So do you think it's fair to say that children of single parent households have to come into adulthood, or male children of single parent households have to come into manhood earlier than maybe children or males that are raised in the household with both parents?
I don't want to say that because no one knows everybody's situation but God, you know. I don't know what could be happening in a two-parent household.
Okay.
But all I can speak on is for myself.
Okay. What about you?
What I would have to say about that is, now, it is most likely that a kid coming from a single parent household does have to grow up at an early age. But I came from a household with a mom and dad, both my parents, and I had to grow up at a young age too.
Okay.
And
which is why I hate to cut you off, but which is why we flock together.
Yeah.
That's why we connected so well.
Okay. Because you all have been friends for how long?
About
seven, eight years.
Okay. Now, how do you bond with other black males as far as friendship is concerned? Because for me, I didn't bond very well. I'm just now at 36 years old coming into a situation where I get along with other black men past, you know, the nod of the head and very superficial conversation and hellos and goodbyes. Has that been easier for you guys? Do you find it, do you find making friends with other black males easier, or is it harder, or does it depend on your interests, you know, things that you like, commonalities?
I don't find it easy at all. It's very difficult for me. It's difficult for me to get along with anybody that is not motivated to become or do something. And I'm not saying that for the whole black race.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying for the ones that I've come... No, I shouldn't even say that. What I'm saying is, it's hard for me because I'm so motivated. I'm always trying to move and go to the next
okay.
thing. So my circle is small. I'm
okay.
not really looking to add to it.
Okay.
So it's hard for me.
Okay.
Because I don't like talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like talking to me. And
okay.
I always stand out as one of those nerdy type, think he all that type, or too
okay.
smart for the rest of us. So they don't think that I know about 50 Cent and the hood and all this
okay.
other good stuff. So why go over there and bother talking to them?
Okay.
With me, I gotta say I'm more of a... Like my mom loves to say it, I'm a social butterfly.
Okay.
But I'm always studying people. I'll talk to a group of people. I'll talk to a couple of people, ask them what their interests are.
Okay.
As I start studying people, you start to learn a lot by certain questions that you'll ask them.
Yeah.
They don't think that you're asking it for any big purpose, but you're asking to get to know this person. How does this person act in this kind of situation? How is this person?
Okay.
Just with the interests, you'll start to know straight off the bat how this person is.
Okay.
If this person is with a mentality of I'm an adult, but you make childish decisions, or has no respect for the law, because you'll hear time and time again, oh, I'm a man, oh, I've been stopped by the police a couple of times. But when it's time for you to become a man and you can't get a job anywhere, that's because of the decisions you made when you were older.
Now, I'm gonna cut in real quick, and again back to the friends that I do have. A lot of my friends do that. They talk. And
mm-hmm.
I sit in the back. And I listen.
Okay.
I like to look and examine before I go in and try to make friends with people. Because I'm going to sit in the back while you talk to Yule, or while you talk to Tony or Linda or any of my other friends. Or if you're just having a random conversation
mm-hmm.
with somebody else. And yes, I am eavesdropping, but... I'm doing that for a purpose, because I'm not finna go over there and waste my time talking about something ignorant.
Okay.
I don't have time to waste.
Okay. How prepared do you think you are for adulthood as a young black male? On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not prepared at all, 10 being extremely prepared. How prepared do you think you are today, right now?
I have a game plan.
Okay.
For manhood.
Okay, but answer the question first on the scale of 1 to 10.
But on the scale from 1 to 10.
1, not being prepared at all. 10, being extremely prepared.
I'd be a 5.
Okay.
And that's just me being, that's me putting myself at a level to be prepared for the worst case scenario.
Okay. So what would be the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario would be for me to be out of school, out of work, and not trying to find a job.
Okay.
Or to provide for my family.
Okay.
And not trying to bless other people with whatever resources that I might have.
Okay. What about you, Yule? On a scale of 1 to 10.
I would actually have to say, from right now, being in the situations that I've been in the past to now, I'd have to say I'd be a 4.
Okay.
But it's just, if I'm thrown out there, I can use those certain things that I've learned.
Okay.
And I can probably have myself up to an 8 or a 9.
Okay. Now, Ashley, you were talking about you had a game plan. What's that game plan for you?
I'm a teacher at currently, right now, I am a teacher. And I teach at an after-school program where I teach all different types of sports and activities.
Okay.
And that's fun and fine and dandy. And at the same time, when I hit that manhood level, which is 21,
okay,
I have been offered a job to teach for HISD and some other school districts under a program called Kickstart, which is a karate program. Now, I can do that and the after-school program and bartend on Saturdays, Sundays, and Fridays, which is what I do if I got out there. So that would be my game plan. Work in the morning teaching karate, which is something I love to do.
Okay.
Work in the afternoon with the kids teaching karate and the other stuff I teach. And then bartend for extra money, you know.
Okay.
Get my income together and get a place of my own, maybe with a friend, you know. Still help my family because I'm real big on that. Whatever I can give and bless other people. And that would be my game plan as far as work would go.
Okay, so for the both of you, you're already 21. Ashley, you'll soon be 21. At age 35, where do you want to be at 35? And how do you plan on getting there? So first of all, where do you plan on being at 35? Because believe it or not, it's right around the corner. Time starts, as the years go by, time starts moving more quickly along. So have you even thought about age 35 yet?
I have.
I haven't.
I have. When I think of myself as age 35, I always want to be a family man.
Okay.
I've always pictured myself having a wife and beautiful kids. And by then, I will be in a house.
Okay.
And there's certain goals that I've set. I will be in a house. I want to be financially stable.
Okay.
And I want to be able to start preparing for when my kids get out of school.
Okay.
It's just, I want to take care of myself to the point where I don't have to worry every night about how am I going to pay this bill, how am I going to pay that bill, where am I going to get the money from. I'll be out of school. Because I'm planning on going back into school soon.
Okay.
And
so what we're going to do is we're going to hold you to that. Okay.
I haven't thought about 35.
Why not?
To be honest, a lot of people in my life told me I wouldn't make it to 35. A lot of people in my life told me I wouldn't make it to where I am now.
Okay.
So getting to where I'm at now is like astonishing to me. It's like, man, I made it.
Okay.
But I don't know, because school is such a big factor to me, and people are always talking about you need your education. And what I'm in school for now, I love to a certain extent, you know.
Okay.
And but I'm debating on if I should change my major, if I should stick with the same major. If I do stick with that major, where should I go with it? If I change my major, where should I go with that one? But I do know I want to teach karate.
Okay.
And it's difficult because I still have dreams of my own that I want to succeed in.
Okay.
But I just don't know which way to go with it, because some of my role models who have followed the same game plan that I might change into.
Okay.
Are doing so well, and they're still teaching karate.
Okay.
But I just don't know.
Okay, well, let me ask you both this. Have you put pen to paper? And because what has always helped me is writing down where you are and where you're trying to go. So have either of you actually written down where you want to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Yeah.
You've written yours down. What about you, Ashley? You've written yours down. How often do you go back and look at that and assess where you are versus where you're trying to go, or what you've written down on that piece of paper?
When I did it back when I was in school, because it was mandatory, and they always asked us to do it, I've looked at it, and so far I'm like two steps ahead of where I said I would be. But it differs. It's like, sometimes I'm ahead, sometimes I'm not.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm right where I said I was going to be.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm way above it. Never way below it, but
okay,
it differs.
Now, I'm going to tell you this, and this is that father figure in me. On a daily basis, everything that you do on a daily basis should start or should put you in the path or the direction of the goal that you have set. Do you think at this stage right now that there is any activity or any wasted time that you are participating in on a daily basis, or is everything that you do on a daily basis productive and conducive to getting you to where you've set for yourself or the goal that you've set for yourself?
I have wasted time. I know for a fact I have wasted time.
Okay, and so what do you do to correct that?
With the people that I waste that time with, I have started to find different ways to hang or be with them and not do what we were doing to waste time and turn it into a learning experience.
Okay.
So, that's one thing.
Yeah, I believe I've wasted time. But it's just also where I'm going right now is I'm actually breaking into a lifelong dream of mine.
Okay.
I'm actually breaking into becoming a professional wrestler.
Okay.
And a lot of people kind of say, oh, well, that's a one in a million shot. Mm-hmm. That's like trying to go in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I've always wanted to do ever since I was a little kid.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to one of the best schools in the United States.
Okay.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about the business. I've learned a lot about myself.
Okay.
I do see that it's put me in the path of where I want to be.
Okay.
If I never make it as a professional wrestler, I would love to be just one of the trainers at the school teaching people my craft.
Okay. How much support do you get for that from your family and friends?
Oh, man. My family's always behind me with it.
Okay.
My mom and dad always knew that I wanted to do this.
Okay.
My fiance, she's behind me 110%, even though she doesn't want to see me wrestle because she's afraid I'm going to get hurt.
Okay.
Friends, I've had some friends that have turned around, well, why you want to do that? That's stupid. Why are you going to try to be a wrestler? Do something real. It's fake. But when I come home with busted lips and black eyes, does that look fake?
Okay.
So I've cut a lot of my friends away.
Okay.
So.
And that's a good skill to have because you're going to need it as an adult on cutting people away. What social skills do you think are most necessary to cope with your new adulthood?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to cut people because there's a lot of people in my life that are lagging behind.
Okay.
And because they at one point in my life were stars and they kept motivating me and we were doing things to help each other get up in the world, doesn't mean that I still need to hold on to them now and I need to learn how to cut. But socially, I would have to say I need to stop being so shy.
Okay.
And I need to stop eavesdropping so much, like I said earlier, and go get into the conversation like Yule does. I need to just go and be like, hey, my name is such and such and such, what are you interested in, you know? But I don't have that.
Okay.
And this, at times I do, but it's only when I'm around certain people that have it themselves. Like, when I'm around Yule, we can go out, and Yule will be like, hey, what's your name? And I'll see somebody, and I'll be like, hey, my name is, what is your name? But when I'm by myself, it's like closed off to the world, so.
What about you, Yule? What social skills do you think are most necessary to cope with your new adulthood?
You have to be open. You can't always think that your path is the right path or what you've been through has been the hardest.
Okay.
You got to be able to be in other people's shoes, realize what struggles they've been through.
Okay.
And one thing my dad's always told me is when you're out in the real world, and he's taught me this ever since I was a little kid, learn words, read the dictionary.
Okay.
He used to make me read the dictionary, learn two words out of it, use it in everyday sentences.
Okay.
And spell it. And sometimes when you throw out a word, when people think that you're something that you are when you aren't, kind of throws them off their game.
Okay. What about the transition between... because you're taught, you know, you're supposed to respect adults and you're supposed to give adults respect. You have to go into your station identification.
Yes.
Okay. I can see it. I'm getting good at this. I love it.
Well, there's a clock in there.
I know. And at the top of every hour. Okay.
And, of course, you know what I have to do.
I know what you're going to do.
What's going to happen?
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
Wonderful. I'm still trying to find the name to go with that voice for
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you.
I can do it.
You can do it.
I have a great voice.
Oh, no, he Christopher melts when he hears this guy.
That is too much.
Well, there's some sort of liquid on the floor. I don't know if he's melting or what.
Wow. Counseling, you really do. as a young...
You're not new here. You should know that by now.
there is a transition where you were supposed to respect adults. How easy was it for you to go into the arena where other men or even some women, you were on the same level as adults? How easy is it to make that transition where you still respect them, but you have to get a sense that they have to respect you now also as an adult and then as an adult male? How easy is it to assert yourself in the sense that I am an adult and you will treat me as such, whether it be with your family and friends or whether you go into a department store or you're placed in a situation where you're the customer? How easy was it for you to make that transition?
It's never been hard for me because having the mother that I have is always then demanding respect. I've never had that problem, and is somewhat of a problem now, because now wherever I go, I demand respect, and if you don't treat me with respect, you're going to get disrespect back. And my brain is taking me back to an incident that I had last week on the Metro rail. A police officer comes up to me, a Metro police officer, and he comes up to me. He's like, "Where's your ticket?" I show him my ticket, and I'm sitting inside, like, facing the other window.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting straight in my chair. So I put my foot in the next seat because no one was sitting by me to lift up to put my wallet back in my back pocket. And he goes, "Excuse me, get your foot out of the chair." And I'm like, "Okay." I let him slide. And what I did was I crossed my leg and I sat with my knee in the chair. Now, my foot wasn't in there and my knee wasn't even touching
mm-hmm.
the chair. And he goes, "Didn't I just tell you to get your foot out of the chair?" And at this moment, I have to make a decision. Do I clown this officer on this train and possibly get thrown off of this train
mm-hmm.
and getting arrested? Or do I just let this go by this day? So I clowned his little tail on the train, and he got live with me and I got live with him, and I told him, while I was clowning, I was like, "Excuse me, sir, if you're going to talk to me in a tone that you would want me to talk to you in. My foot wasn't in the chair, and you asked me once to get my foot out of the chair, and I did so. Now you're asking me again, and my foot is not in the chair, so you need to make up your mind on what you want me to do.
Okay.
But talk to me like you got some respect. And if you don't think that you can, give me your badge number and your contact information so I can call your supervisor, because the next stop down is the freaking Metro headquarters. And I would love to get off the train and go talk to your supervisor."
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. What was, when you put your knee in the chair, you did that on purpose, didn't you? Because you were pushing the envelope. So I'm going to tell you right now, at that point, you were actually exhibiting childish behavior.
I did not.
Because what you should have done as an adult is, once, if you believe he disrespected you when you had your leg in there, you were trying to put your wallet in, what you should have done at that point is, once he made his statement to you or whatever, instead of provoking him by putting your knee, because you did that on purpose because you knew it would push him, what you should have done at that point is what you said you would have done towards the end, is get his information. Because as an adult, what you will learn is that the pen is mightier than the sword. And all you have to do is ask him, "I need your information so I can place a complaint against you with your supervisor, and don't provoke him, because what's going to happen is that they're going to use that against you.
Now, I know you may think from knowing me for so long and knowing my attitude that I did that on purpose, but in actuality, at that incident, I didn't. Now, there's been some other incidents where I pushed it, but that incident, I didn't. All I did was cross my leg and continue sitting to the side. My knee, like I said, was not even touching the chair.
Okay, so in this instance, when after you did all of that, what did you do? Did you actually...
Like, I turned straight. Like,
no, I'm not talking about, but did you file a complaint?
I didn't, no. He left, he calmed down and said, he said, I didn't mean no disrespect, but you need to respect the other people's space. And I was like, but there's no one sitting here.
And but let me tell you where he's coming from. In the event somebody gets on and your foot is there, then they're going to pass up that seat because you've made it unavailable. And I know you were going to say, oh, well, I'll just move it once they get on.
Exactly.
But you have to respect that he's just doing his job. Again, I say I think you provoked him. I really do think that you did.
I forgot what the question was about.
As a young African-American male, have you ever experienced racism? And would you recognize it if you did? You breathe hard.
Oh, man. I'm mixed. I'm black and white, so I don't look like either. But I experienced...
You look black.
Yeah, to some
people. I'm
just
messing with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, oh, man, I experienced it on both sides. Whole thing about, oh, I'm half white, so a lot of people jump on, oh, you're a white boy, you're a white boy, you don't know how to do this, you don't know how to do that. But then when some people kind of know me, I was, oh, okay, I don't consider myself white, I don't consider myself black, I consider myself Yule. You got to get to know me.
Okay.
I experienced racism with people at restaurants, people when I've walked through Walmart, gas stations, anywhere you go, there's somebody ignorant enough to point that out.
Okay.
And
how have you handled that?
When I was younger, it used to make me angry.
Okay.
But now that I'm older, it's to a point where, and they're doing this, why? It doesn't hurt me. It's just being stupid.
Okay. How do you think that settles in your psyche, or how do you think, how you're processing it today is the same way you'll process it 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
Well, it's just the whole thing of you can say what you want.
Okay.
But when those words start turning into actions and it's starting to become a harm, that's when that's going to be a problem. But if the same stuff goes on when I'm 35, like we were talking about earlier, I'd still see it the same way.
Okay. Excellent.
I've had to deal with it a lot growing up. But the one that like stands out to me is it was me and my mom, and we were taking a Christian trip down to Disney World.
Okay.
And the place we were staying, a hotel, motel, I forgot where we were, but we were staying somewhere, and the managers and all the staffs that were not Mexican, and excuse me if I offend anybody by saying that, but they were racist, and they wouldn't give us toilet tissue for the restroom. They wouldn't come open our doors if one of the children had locked themselves out. They somebody got off of work, and they were getting in their car, and they let us know that they were racist and by their actions and what they were saying to us. And the reason why it stands out is because my mom, being the leader that she is, got a whole bunch of people together, and they went down there and they talked to the manager.
Okay.
And then she came upstairs, and then when everybody patted her on her back and they left, she came and sat down on the bed and she started to cry. And that was my first time. No, it wasn't my first time, but that was my first time actually being hurt.
Okay.
By it.
Okay.
Or second. I think that was my second time being hurt by it. But I deal with it on a day-to-day basis. but it doesn't affect me. It's
just, it doesn't affect you anymore.
Because my aunt told me, like, this saying about ducks and how ducks don't ever get wet. And when they put their head in the water, it's like you got to be like a duck when somebody says some words to you. Got to be like a duck. You got to let it roll off.
Okay.
Well, one thing that just kind of came to my mind, and I know you're going to remember this, was when we used to live in some apartments. And it was me, it was you, it was Lawrence, and it was Jonathan. And we were like the, what's the best way to put it, the Four Musketeers. Just add one. Just add one more.
Yeah.
And we were at this gas station, and this Indian guy owned this gas station. And it was right next to a Chinese food restaurant.
Oh, my God.
We walked in there. All of us walked in one by one. And we were walking. We were picking up stuff that we were going to take to the cash register. And one guy that was there, that was mopping, was paying a certain eye to Ashlyn right over there, thinking that he was stealing stuff. Well, Ashlyn came out and they said, he's stealing, they're stealing. He said, well, you can check my jacket. He takes off his jacket, gives it to the guy. Oh, it's in his pants, it's in his pants. We were in that gas station. We were in that corner store for about an hour and a half. They didn't call us young black males. Basically,
they didn't even have a problem with you. They loved you.
Yeah.
And the lady that was working there gave us problems after that day. Every day we came in there, but they loved you. It was crazy. And I remember that day. Yes, I do.
So you all stayed in there for an hour?
We stayed there for an hour.
And a half.
We were waiting. They were calling the cops on us. But every time that they would talk to a cop, or when they weren't talking to a cop, they would call us the N-words. And
did you all report this to your parents?
Oh, yeah. I reported it to my dad.
Okay. I didn't go back and tell my mom or...
Why not?
I don't know. To be honest with you, at that time, I don't know. I don't even remember why I didn't do it. Only person I remember telling was my younger cousin, Ray Van.
Okay.
But my mom, I didn't tell her. I just kept that to myself.
Have you made a life plan? I think we've already talked about this. You both said that you have some dreams and some aspirations and some goals already written down. How often do you go back and revamp that or revise that for yourself? Because it's very, I'm going to tell you now, it's very unusual for young men to do that. So I certainly applaud you both for doing that. But y'all are kind of exceptional and not the rule.
Yeah, we bend the rules.
Okay.
I don't know. To be honest with you, as far as going back on paper, I don't do it that often. I think at one point in time I burnt one of them.
Why did you burn it?
I think I burnt it as a milestone, as me saying to myself, okay, this part of my life is done, it's okay, over with, it's time to move ahead. But if we're not talking about paper, then almost every day I have to go back and look at my life. Because, okay, I'm still on the metro system, so like I explained earlier. So I go back through the neighborhoods and towns that I grew up, and I see this stuff, and if they're getting better or if they're turned down or whatever, and I have to relive where I was and where I was trying to go, and okay, then look at myself now and that metro bus window that's like almost a two-way mirror, and look at myself and then think, is this where I want to be? Is this where I was trying to go?
Okay.
Am I a good person? Am I a bad person? Stuff like that. But it's on a daily basis.
Okay. How much pressure do you put on yourself to be successful?
Well, with I don't put a lot of pressure on myself, because it's just the whole thing of, you put too much pressure, you're not gonna think clearly about it.
Okay.
You're gonna not take chances that can actually benefit you. You're always gonna want to play it safe.
Okay.
And I got to go back to the point that we were just talking. I've checked mine every half a year, every 6 months, and okay, I've always thrown them away after it, because for the longest I wanted to do something that wasn't me.
Okay.
I went to Job Corps to become an electrician. Could not get a job in that field because where I came from and being an electrician wasn't something I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
And you weren't passionate about it.
Yeah.
One subject. Go ahead.
We were just talking about. Dang, I just lost it.
Okay, while you try to find it. Yeah. How have you learned to cope or deal with your relationships with women?
Hold on. The pressure thing. I dang near kill myself with this pressure on being successful. Because at a young age, I learned what an asset was and what a liability was.
Okay.
So, even though it's been some times where I don't have a job, I almost kill myself because I'm so worried that if I don't succeed in life, my mom will fail.
Okay.
Because we're still in the same household. And whenever I'm working, it seems to make everything so much easier. And whenever I'm saving, she always has money for a rainy day. But whenever I'm not, that is the toughest time for me. And I have to put on this strong image.
Okay.
This masculine image and act like that everything's okay. And I hope she's not listening to this right now. Because if she is, we're going to have a talk when I get home. But I have to put on like this. It's okay, mama. It's going to be all right. We're going to make it. Let's do it this way. Let's do this, and this. And then have to be strong for her when I'm internally dying.
Okay. Okay, let me share something with you because we actually share the same background. I came up in a single family household. So at the age of 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, I'm worried about light bills, phone bills, gas bills, about gas for the car, about food in the house. So I know where that pressure comes from. And at that time, I wasn't very happy with the pressure I would put on myself or the presumed pressure I thought that what the household was going through was putting on me. And I do remember at 13 or 14 years old, and I think the statute of limitations has run out, going to the grocery store and actually stealing bread and stealing lunch meat and stealing cheese so that there would be, put that phone down,
Crime Stoppers give me $2,000 for that.
I think the statute of limitations has run out, especially if I don't tell you what grocery store it was, but feeling the pressure to make sure that we had enough food in the house to eat and actually putting the household in a bigger jeopardy by taking a chance on getting caught. So I do understand that pressure. But what it did was is it did speed me or expedite me into manhood, not the stealing, but the mindset that I have to take control of the situation to make sure that there's food in the household. When my mom was very much capable, but you don't like to see your mother struggle after seeing her struggle for so long. So I understand that pressure. But at this age, I am very much thankful that I went through that experience because it has aided me and helped me in putting the hatches down or standing my ground or making decisions or crucial decisions. And it's put me in a place where I am a lot of times mentally, emotionally, and spiritually beyond people that I grew up with because I've made those types of decisions. I've been put in situations where it's do or die, where I have to figure out a way how to get money for the light bill. So while you're going through it, it's not cute, but once you become an adult, you will see that those types of things or those type of concerns, they're not as hard for you to deal with because you started dealing with them at an earlier age. So they do become beneficial down the road, although they didn't feel good even at the age you're at now. Once you get down the road, you will actually see that you may be partly more advanced than other men your age at 36 or 35. You've already made those types of decisions. You already know how to regulate or control your finances because you know what it's like already when other men haven't had to deal with that. You know, there are some people who aren't even concerned with the light bill until they actually move into their own place. But you already know what that's like. You already know how to deal with that. So it may not feel good at this point, but there's nothing really wrong with pressure to a certain extent, because men are defined by the pressure that they're put under and whether or not and how you come out of it. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard the saying, it's like, if you get the best out of an orange once you put it under pressure. That's where you get the juice from. So whatever you put under pressure, what comes out is what it's made of. So, but to the women, about how do you establish relationships with women, how do you learn, how did you learn to date, how did you learn how to love, and you will rest his head in the cradle of his elbow.
Let us discuss this women thing, y'all. Come on, enlighten us.
I gotta say, when I was at a younger age, when I was in middle school, I was trying to look for certain aspects of what I want out of a relationship. My mom loves to say it, I wear my heart out on my sleeve. And I've been through a lot of relationships that also...
Okay, hold on. You're 21. Yeah. What's a lot?
Oh, man.
relationships. Yeah. Okay, let's do this. What's your definition at this age of a relationship? What is a relationship?
Well, let me change that around. Dating, like girlfriends. Like, all right, relationships, something that's steady. I shouldn't have put it like that because I've had, we could call little flings. It wasn't anything serious.
Okay.
And I'm not talking... He's over here laughing. I'm not talking about that. But a relationship, I gotta say, is something that is... It does last some time. And it's basically a connection, a mutual respect kind of thing.
Okay. Ashlyn, what's your definition of a relationship?
A relationship is an agreement between two people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as far as I'm going to go into
that. You know what? I can tell y'all are still 21 because y'all don't have the foggiest idea what a relationship is. But you'll come into that. You're engaged. You have a fiancé.
Yes.
I was going to ask some questions, but we'll leave that for breakfast. I don't want to get you in trouble.
I ain't going to get in trouble.
So do you actually think at this age, do you plan on getting married soon, or you going to let more time pass?
Since she's listening on
Actually, we're going to start planning the stuff on the beginning of the year.
Okay.
And I've been with her for about 6 years now, ever since I was 14 in ninth grade.
When you first met him, Mr. Christopher.
Okay. Yeah, when you first met me. That's when we started going out. And she's not like any of the other girls I've ever met. She was different in a really good way.
Okay.
She, other girls were caring about, oh, let's do this, let's do that. She actually cared for me. She wanted to know how was my day, what's going on. She wasn't there to see what I can do for her, but she was there for when there was something wrong with me.
Okay. What about you, Ashlyn?
As far as anything goes with women, I've been blessed because, and this is why I'm somewhat, this is why I am really thankful to be brought up the way I was brought up in the household that I was brought up in. It was nothing but women. I had my mom, her two sisters, my niece, and then my grandmother, and female babysitters and everything, you know. So I've learned a lot of things from all the women is in my life, and I've had majority of women mm-hmm. in my life. So as far as girlfriends mm-hmm. and female friends go, I'm 85% cool in that area. I'm just gonna shut up.
Go ahead. We sitting out in the lobby before we came in. One of you asked, I can't remember, says parents seem to require so much from you, coming from high school into working world. I'm gonna tell you, a lot of that is that because they have been in the world for a while, they understand the pressures and some of the roadblocks and some of the things that you're going to run into as an adult. And what they're trying to do is, their hope is to have you prepared as soon as possible as early as possible, because a parent's greatest nightmare, a parent that truly loves you, is for them to close their eyes and they're not sure that you can take care of yourself. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to rush you or get you to a place where they know that you're self-sufficient and that you can take care of yourself. It's not that they're being, can I say ass? It's not that they're being that, but it's that because they care about you and they understand how tough the world can be, they want to make sure that you're in a place where you can take care of yourself, especially for a single parent. That is a single parent, let's just get real, a black mother's greatest fear is that she closes her eyes or she meets an untimely death before she knows that her child can take care of himself. So if you ever feel that pressure from your mother, or you're like, okay, what is her problem? That is her issue, because she's very much well aware of what's going on in the world, and that any time that could happen to her. And she wants to know that you can take care of yourself. My mother right now, that was her prayer, is that my child can take care of themselves if I ever close my eyes. So it's not that she's being, that word I said, I don't want to call your mom that. See, I'll get in trouble with it too. But she wants to make sure that you can take care of yourself. And even if you have both parents at home. So you have to understand that a lot of times if they're yelling at you that you're not getting it right, or why did you make that mistake, is because they want to ensure that you're at a place where you can take care of yourself. And they can have that peace of mind. It says, becoming a man... And, oh, this, Ashlyn, this was you. Becoming a man and out of work, you feel bad. You said something about women standing by a man and treating him as head of household when his income is, or he has none, or he has income less than hers. Well, this usually comes in the form of when you're dating a woman. Every woman wants to feel secure. That, I believe, and some women might disagree, but I think a woman's greatest need is to feel secure. If you're in a household with a woman and you don't have any money coming in, she's going to have a problem with that, because what are you doing? I think as long as she sees you being trying, as long as you're trying, then they might not have a problem with it. But you can't try too long. Yeah, and you just can't do anything. And again, it's all about self-sufficiency, especially if it's coming from your mother. She wants to know, I need to know you have a get-up-and-go attitude.
Oh, that wasn't coming from my mom. Oh, okay. That was, in actuality, coming from some friends of mine situation and a comic, Monique. I was watching Queens of Comedy or something, uh-huh, that she was on, and she was like, my man don't have no job, and I'm paying him to, like, so he can go out, uh-huh, and do his things. And she was like, but I still treat him as the MF king of the MF house.
Also,
and
uh-huh,
whatever, everything must go through him, because that's my MF king.
And you do know right now that she divorced that same man, right?
I did not know that.
They're divorced. So, and she's actually remarried, okay, now, with the guy that she's
dating.
I didn't know that either.
Yes.
That's messed up.
But that's kind of like how it is at my house. Basically, my dad's the head of the house. He has the last say-so in anything.
Okay.
And it's kind of unique, because it's a little bit jumping back on the relationship thing. That's how me and my fiance's relationship is. It's basically, if she's doing something that I kind of think that's not good, or it's going to cause a big problem,
mm-hmm,
she won't do it. Same thing with me.
Okay. But who is making, like, this was my problem. Who's making
the money?
The money. The most money.
Me.
Like, no, not between you and your fiance. But if it was your mom and your dad, would your mom then be head of the household? Or would your dad then still be head of the household? That's I'm having a problem with that.
Normally, I'm going to tell you, in relationships where people don't communicate, then whoever makes the most money is making all of the decisions. But in the typical American household where you have male-female relationships, the male, regardless of who's making the most money, is supposed to be the head of the household. But reality check, it actually, who makes the most money? Unless, again, you have a very understanding couple who've already talked about that. But most people don't talk about that issue when it comes to who's making the most money. But you can look out in the world. Whoever makes the money makes the decisions.
Well, and I've seen that in a relationship that's close to home. And I've seen it. And it makes me question what I feel about love and marriage, which is not something we're supposed to be getting into, but you did ask us about how we get along with women, and that would in turn lead into relationships, would in turn lead into love and all this other good stuff. But I just don't sit too well with that, because if that's the case, then why should one of my goals in manhood be to get married?
Oh, that's a question you have to ask yourself.
Well, just kind of brush back on the whole, basically, money issue. Well, my dad went to school. He didn't have a job. Basically, he was a student. My mom, waitress. And my mom, we used to live in this three-bedroom apartment. Dad was going to school. My mom was a waitress. My mom was making the income when my dad was going to school. My dad had all the say so. What went on? If I wanted to go to the movies, I'd ask my mom. Mom said, "Hey, go ask your dad." And I'd ask my dad. He would say yes or no. But that was like how it was with any big decision.
Okay. Well, we are out of time. I want to thank you all so much for listening and tuning in to Black on Black with my guests Yule and Ashlyn. And in my last comments is that the transition from childhood to manhood, especially for men, especially for African American men, is a hard one, but it is one that can be done. And I want to thank you too. I think you two are doing a wonderful job at your transition. I want you to keep journaling your journey as far as where you are today and where you plan on going. Reassess it. And most definitely reaffirm where you want to go. Don't let people deter you if you have a dream or if you have a goal. And sometimes you have to be the trailblazer. You may not have the type of support that you're looking for. Sometimes you have to be your own support. And people will fall in line once they see you become successful. But always remember the people that were there at the beginning for you, who, when most people didn't support you, that they supported you. And don't forget those people. But always reaffirm in yourself who you are and what you're trying to do. And take into consideration everything that your parents tell you. Take it, understand it, use it to the best of your ability. But always remember, you are going to have to make your own way in this world. You're going to have to make your own way. And just be successful. What are you doing? I'm sitting here trying to talk and he's taking pictures. But again, thank you for joining us. You all have any last comments before we go out with our song?
I'm just trying to remember the moment. That's why I was taking pictures.
But, okay, I got you.
And good night to all of y'all out there. And I hope to be back on the radio talking to you guys again.
This was actually great. I enjoyed doing this.
Thank you. This is Christopher Evans with Black on Black. And certainly thank you. And we'll see you again next month.
Bye.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League.
What's wrong with your ear?
Sign your name on the blacklist and know this. It's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed. See a real life. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Oh, here's one. Become what you've always wanted to be. Your new body awaits you at gym. Great.
Is there something wrong with your old one?
Right here. Okay. This is it. Page 37, our local gay newspaper. Laser hair removal. Prices starting at $99. Botox, collagen, Symetra, microderm abrasion, laser treatment for wrinkles, dark marks, unwanted tattoos, red faces, and broken blood vessels. Mole removal, glycolic chemical peels, acne, facials, eyelid surgery, brow lift, facelift, scar revision. Scar revision. That's interesting.
Mark Weigel, Love Your Body. This is After Hours.
She got some over there.
We're kind of going to break our round table here into two little segments here, because we're going to cover a topic here in the first part. Let me start off with this by saying that standard commentary rules apply. You know, whatever you hear is the thoughts and opinions of the person who says them. Doesn't that necessarily represent anyone else with After Hours, the station, Pacifica Network, or anyone on this continent, planet, or
galaxy
candidate for president? Because we're going to talk here about prisoners and MBBs and such. And there's going to be a twist kind of here on the end. And I know that may, something, some stuff that I may say, some things some other people might say on here, might come as a surprise to some of our MBBs. But we're going to put it out there for discussion. First of all, I want to talk about a letter we got last week from Tigger. He sent a long, lengthy letter here that we couldn't get to. Part of it was talking about the black-on-black segment from last month that we had, which I was a large part of, with the topic of body image and discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to read through a lot more of this on here, but just really to paraphrase. You know, he had some issues with larger people, and, you know, rightfully so. It's one of those things that something happens, and you lump everybody who was in that in a certain venue. And he sees more of understanding of issues with hearing me coming on and talking about these instances. And I can understand that. You know, I wasn't too sure about transgenders.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was first listening to the show, I turned off the shows when it was the transgender segment. Then I started listening to it and started understanding where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first reason I walked into this station, was to come in and go up to Sarah De Palma and say, I just want you to know that you changed one person's opinion, at least.
Yeah.
And that has to do a lot with what we do here on the show, is to, because Jimmy and I've talked about it sometimes, or it seems like I commandeer a lot of stuff and talk a lot about myself. You know, there'll be a sign up here that says TMI. Sometimes it feels like.
Yeah.
And I've wondered sometimes about pulling back. And with that last segment that we did on Black on Black, I really started thinking about it more, and I started getting letters from a couple different MBBs. From Tigger. We've got one from trying to see if this is what name to use on his. I got a couple of letters in from Marvin saying, you know, that's good that we do that, and you know, I mean. I know we've had Merlin on here several times. We've talked about his situations. We've back in the days when hosts were very unreliable, we used to tease about the fact that with Merlin, you can spin the wheel, pick two topics, and, you know, disabled, HIV,
domestic abuse.
You know, we can pull a lot of stuff
Pagan.
Out. Yeah. But, so I wanted to touch a little on that, and then we've got another new one here from E, who sent his letter saying he was upset that it, you know, got down to the round table last week, and he enjoyed the Leather Boys and the Bi Show, and as soon as it got to the round table, the radio signals got crossed, and he was getting something about Klan-loving super right-wing GOP, which definitely is not on.
Definitely not our show. Yeah.
No, yeah. That's a little bit further east, I think.
Yeah. And there's a lot of talk with the transgendered host there, and So we're going to be handing that over to, I'll hand that letter over to the T-Talk gals on that. But, now one thing, we get a lot of letters from MBBs. We get a lot of contact. Sometimes we think it's only people that are listening to our show. Sometimes. And we're going to be talking about something here, and we're not talking about the MBBs that are, you know, in because they had, you know, a little too much pot in their pocket and got busted.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the ones who, you know, fooled around with someone who was willing to, and the law says that they are not able to say they're willing to.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the people who even did a little robbery,
yeah,
a little burglary, didn't hurt anybody. We're going to be talking tonight about murder, plain and simple. And it's something that came across this past week, and I've gotten stirred up with it. You know, one of my first forays into the queer community was an organization called Q Patrol.
Yeah.
And
I remember Q Patrol.
And I spent 7-8 years as a real dedicated part of my life doing that. That was the first part of me being gay that my family respected, is that I came down here and worked in an organization that kept an eye out for hate crimes. And Q Patrol was started because of a really nasty murder. Before Brandon Tina, I'll even throw out one name that probably no one knows, Billy Jack Gaithier, who's a hate crime victim out of Georgia, that was actually profiled on PBS.
Before Shepard.
Before Matthew Shepard.
Matthew Shepard, yeah.
We had Paul Broussard here in Houston. The reason why all this is coming up, this is 16 years after the fact, is that the final person in who is convicted of committing the crime is trying to get parole. And there is a certain person who is working very hard to see that it happens. One of the problems I have is still using the label gay activist referring to him. And personally, I feel that that title was lost long ago. So what I want to do is I want to talk about what happened and what's going to happen. And unlike the other stories you hear, I'm going to read from something that was written down on paper. Because what is written down on paper doesn't get changed. And I've heard the story 4 or 5 different ways. And I've been hearing the story being told a lot differently now. Where now it's going the fact that this person was killed because they knew he was gay, because he was wearing a silk shirt and short shorts.
It's turned into what they call a Rashomon situation, where everyone has a different shade of the truth of the actual story.
Actually, it's the same person, but the story has changed over the years. Yeah. From a gay bashing to gay panic to now, he deserved it because he was dressing like he was fag.
And that's
is what I took out of it.
That's just not right.
So, I happened to find the article out of Outsmart magazine that was written 6 years ago on the 10th anniversary. This person interviewed the people involved in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to bring it out to let people know, because you know, this was, unfortunately, now that we don't have a gay media. Sorry, Joey Pags, we do have a gay media in Houston. We don't have that weekly one that we used to have. So this story may not have gotten the coverage that it should have.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that it got the mainstream coverage that it did. I will tell you that I went flush last week when I was over at my parents' house. And after watching Brothers and Sisters, seeing Channel 13 starting their newscast off with saying, "We're talking about this case." Right. And if it wasn't for that hit-and-run accident that killed a toddler, it would have been the top story on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And that it was like, whoa. So here's what we're going to talk about. And we're going to weigh in afterwards about this. Just a little background, because some of the people here never heard of Paul Broussard.
Some of the people here were pretty small when Paul Broussard
died.
I
remember the news report, and I remember thinking, my God, is that what they do to, you know, is that what they do to you if you dress or act or look a certain way, you know?
So here's the story. This is from Outsmart Magazine. You can go to the website outsmartmagazine.com and do a search of Paul Broussard, and you'll find the article here. Or you can just do a search. Mm-hmm. On the night of July 4th, 1991, Paul Broussard, a 27-year-old gay banker in Houston, and two of his friends, Carrie Anderson and Richard Delaney, were assaulted as they traversed a parking lot in the Montrose area. Their assailants were 10 youths from the Woodlands, an upscale suburb north of Houston. The boys, all but three, were only 17. The eldest was 22. Had been cruising the Montrose area earlier that evening, harassing those who they presumed gay by throwing rocks at them. With their, quote, queer rocks, unquote, as they called them, they had already smashed the windshield of a car and hit a passing man in the mouth. When the attackers encountered three gay men, they began asking for directions to Heaven, a nearby gay nightclub. Upon being told the directions, the boys leapt out of their two vehicles and assaulted Broussard and his friends with fists, steel-toed boots, 2x4 studded with nails, and at least one knife. Broussard's two friends, Delaney and Anderson, although injured, managed to escape. Broussard, however, was trapped and subject to a vicious beating. They assaulted Broussard, according to Delaney. The boys were cheering and yelling wildly, roaring like a crowd in a football game. "We were the football," said Delaney later. In the end, Paul Broussard suffered multiple cuts and abrasions, a puncture by a nail driven through the board, a broken rib, bruised testicles, three stab wounds, and death. As he lay almost unconscious on the ground with his hand raised up as if pleading for mercy for help, two of the assailants rifled his pockets and took his comb as a souvenir. Then the boys drove off, still yelling and cheering. As they returned to the Woodlands going up I-45, the two carloads of assailants drove side by side down the highway, leaning out of the window, slapping palms together in noisy high fives. They capped off the evening with a pre-dawn breakfast at Denny's. According to later depositions, it was at Denny's that John Bice showed a knife to some of the others, bragging, "It's the one that, quote, stuck the queer." After that, I'm going to paraphrase and pull away from the quoting on the story here. The assailants were caught because the guys were bragging about it. Then the girlfriend of one of them turned them into a gay professor who contacted Ray Hill, who then worked with police to get them brought to justice. As a result, these 10 people, 17 to 22-year-old, five of them received probation or deferred adjudication. Sentences included boot camp during the summer, 500 hours of community service in the GLBT community, attending a Parents of Murdered Children meeting, and also ordered them to pay for the hospital bills and the funeral. Three other assailants received 15-year and one-day prison sentences for their admitted participation in the buildings. Those three with 15-year sentences may have served as little as 2 years in prison. John Bice was sentenced for 45 years in prison for his effect because he had a weapon that he used. Mm. He's currently up for parole for a second time. One of the things on this article they talk about is the culture of hate that was brought up in that they were going to in the Woodlands. One of the other things you have to look at with this is, you know, some of the arguments for why 15 years is, they feel is enough is The kids were drunk. They were stoned. And they were high. Because they admit that, John Weiss admits in this article that, let's see, all the assailants that night had been terribly drunk. Some, like Weiss, were also high on marijuana and hopped up on LSD. The argument is that because they were stoned and that, they shouldn't have gotten as bad of a punishment as they did. I'm sorry. This station carries the Drug Truth Network. We used to have Dean Becker on here, but you're 17 years old. You're not supposed to be drinking at all. None of them should have been drinking, should have been doing drugs. That's against the law.
Yeah.
The only people in this entire, I mean, you know, maybe one or two of the assailants legally could have been drinking. The three victims were old enough to drink because they came out of a bar.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that these kids were drunk and stoned, I don't see that as a mitigation. They don't get, you don't get a free pass because of that.
No.
Now, this is the story that, you know, is what came out from a professor who interviewed the victim. I'm sorry, interviewed the assailants and went through the court records and wrote this stuff up. And that's what I heard when I first got into the community. That was the story of what happened. But it's been changed now. The story then went to that one of the victims needed to go take a leak in one of the bushes. And where one of the attackers was, and supposedly one of the victims made a pass at him. So, like, I think when the last parole hearing came up, it was a gay panic defense.
Mm-hmm.
And Broussard went to help his friend, and the rest of the Woodlands 10 piled out of their cars to help their friend, and they had the gay panic defense.
Right.
And like I said, now it's the fact of, you know, they knew they were gay because they were wearing queer clothing. And that's, you know, that's what the story is being told by the voice of the gay community. While he was on his radio, on a radio show, being interviewed on another station earlier in this week. And I'm sorry. I don't know how any of else you feel, but a person's dead. The guys who admitted to it only got 15 years. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if this guy was gay, straight, black, white, male, female.
It's still a hate crime and somebody's dead, and that's... No.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hate crime part isn't...
Well, here's where the thing is for me. You hear so very often about the phrases these days. You hear phrases like plea bargain, and you hear time off for good behavior, and I'm sorry. I don't care if you've decided to become a priest, rabbi,
imam.
I don't give a rat's
ass.
What? If you are sent to me, if you are sentenced to a certain amount of time, that's how long your ass needs to be in there.
Better damn well stay in prison.
And you need to stay there. Now, understanding fully from my point of view that I believe that anybody can change as a person. True. Over the course of time.
But it doesn't.
I believe that anybody. I mean, I've met. I have known people who were gay bashers, and who turned into some pretty reasonable human beings. That does not negate paying for a crime. To me, if you have committed the crime, then, as the rhyme has been going on, you should do the time. If you do it, you should stay there until the end of that sentence. there shouldn't be any of this nonsense of good behavior. Well, whoop-de-frickin'-do. Good behavior, my queer ass.
The victim didn't get off for good behavior. He got beaten to death, okay?
Mm-hmm. You ended a man's life. You ended somebody's life. You know, that person had a right to exist in this world.
Honestly,
and people took that away from him.
And, yeah, right now, the push is to have him serve at least 27 years. That he should be in prison
they
for at least...
They should have locked him up and done it.
I saw Broussard's mother all over the TV this past week.
And,
you know, she was very calm and very collected in the way she spoke. But that's a mother who lost her child.
She's
and
not
queer or not, she lost her child. These people took away a piece of her life, a very large piece of her life.
Okay, let's let everyone know you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, listener sponsored, commercial free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. We're kind of at the beginning of our roundtable discussion here. We're about the middle of it, actually. Where we're discussing the Paul Broussard case. 16 years ago, three men left a bar called Heaven. For those of you who were not around,
used to be
7 years ago, it's now the building
South Beach. Well.
Yeah, it's the building that's now called South Beach.
Some call it South Beach.
It was kind of,
they left there.
It was kind of funny to watch because they keep showing the same loop. Of the front of Heaven when it was
file footage,
the file footage loop of that, and it's the same car going around the building over and over again. And I look at that, and I remember oh so well when it was Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we jokingly refer to the night it went away as the night
Helm at Heaven,
or Heaven went up in flames. But I had only lived here in Texas a year when the whole Broussard thing came to be.
That was the summer before my sophomore year in high school.
And I was like... Now, I had to come halfway across the country to be a completely out-of-the-closet queer man. And to be that out of the closet... And then, so very immediately, to be presented with an action of hate on a level mm-hmm. like that, to know that somebody, somewhere, seemed to have made it clear to their children that And you know, a lot of these folks from these kind of neighborhoods are the same folks who will be sitting up in church on, you know, spouting God, Jesus, and everything. Well, I may be pagan, but I do remember that amongst the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not commit murder. And where in the hell do you come off justifying the ending of a man's life because, oh, he was different from you.
Yeah. That's not, I mean, murder is wrong. But murdering someone because they're a minority, because they're gay, or because they're, you know, different from you, no matter what, is still a hate crime.
The problem is this. You know, I don't care about the hate crime label because of the way it's written in Texas is the hate crime only takes effect after someone's been sentenced and found guilty, mm-hmm. and they can tack on some years to the sentence.
Yeah,
right. Okay, hate crime or not, you know, doesn't matter. This is a person walking down the street.
Yeah,
and even if you count the other guys, it was 10-3.
Which mm-hmm. that's just wrong.
And if you want to put, you know, the fact that the 10 were drunk and stoned and high, I'm pretty sure after a night of a holiday weekend, a holiday time like that, the three guys came out of the bar. We're probably not in full faculties.
Hmm.
So if you want to use their diminished capacity, use their, the other guys, use the victim's diminished capacity. It was 10 against
1.
3.
Wow,
3. Three. One of them, two of them got away early enough. Mm-hmm. So it was 10 on 1.
Yeah.
The fact that he sat there and bragged about it to his girlfriend and said, this is the knife that, you know, stabbed the queer.
It was a, well, that was a different guy who admitted it. He
but still.
Spice did this out of Danny's when they were doing their post thing.
What,
now, another excuse that's being made about some of these guys is the fact that some of them have come out, at least to themselves,
mm-hmm.
that they're gay. So there was this argument of, you know, it's, they were suppressing their homosexuality and they acted out on it, and, you know, they're being
and
told queers are worse.
Ended somebody's life.
You force.
You can be out of the closet. You can be as queer as a $3 bill. More power to you. But you still ended a man's life.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you couldn't cope with who you were doesn't mean
someone else has to suffer.
Somebody else has to suffer for it.
And some of the guys that were given probation later got into other problems. They didn't even complete their own probation and got into mm-hmm. trouble for that. You know, got released early, had to go back. So we're talking about a guy. The knife wounds may or may not have been the fatal blows. The beating they did, you know, the knife wound could have been, you know, icing on the cake. Could even, you know, could also be, I mean, could be, you know, incidental. It didn't do anything to him. But he got the biggest sentence of this. And he's been in for 15 years for killing a man.
Mm-hmm.
15 years is not a long time. Those other people got off damn lucky. They mm-hmm. should have been in for more. In for more.
Absolutely.
But again, we're talking 91. And
here.
They went up, a bunch of 17-year-olds. I'm sorry, I didn't, you know. They, a bunch of teenagers, they killed a gay guy. Get the right jury in there, they could care less. That can still happen today.
Yep.
Yeah. We have.
I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. I was expecting a gate crasher today, so every time I hear the door open, I'm like, okay. But it's, you know, this is something that, you know, for me, the part of what this comes to is when this incident occurred, I was 19. I knew I was gay. I wasn't out yet. And to be closeted and watching on the news, the rallies, you know, to get 1,000 people together for a candlelight vigil,
mm-hmm.
to say enough is enough.
Oh, is that one of those?
It worried me, you know. It made me afraid to want to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what, you know, out of this incident, that's what got the police substation here in the Montrose.
Yeah.
The groups Queer Nation and ACT UP formed a citizens patrol group called Q Patrol that went out and did the neighborhoods. And it was this show, right here that we're on, After Hours, that let me know that it was safe to come out to the neighborhoods. Yeah. Because at that time, Q Patrol was patrolling during the show. And they would call in and say, everything's fine. We haven't had an incident, you know, where we saw these guys, we chased them away, all's good. And I felt safe enough to come out to this community, to right. be a part of it, and then to join this organization.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, to spend a decent chunk of my time as part of that, being someone on the front line watching out for someone else, you know, not going to a bar and drinking on a Saturday night, but driving around making sure that people got to their car. And I took great pride in that, and I still do. You know, if we had the resources,
some of us feel safe that there was somebody out there watching, that there was, that amongst all the hundreds and hundreds of people who just wanted to go out and have themselves a good old roaring time, there was a handful who wanted to make sure that the ones who were doing that could do it and feel safe.
I mean, I take it for granted. I've said it before. I take it for granted that I can walk through this neighborhood and feel safe.
Yeah.
But lately, I don't feel safe walking on Taft. I don't feel safe walking on Pacific. You know, because it seems that it's gotten, we're getting back to where we were in 91. You know, where there's random people on the street and they may not be cruising for, you know, trade or something. They might be cruising for something else.
You don't see half as, much of this on the news anymore.
No.
You know, I mean, there have been bashings in this neighborhood. There have been attacks in this neighborhood in recent months, in the last couple of years, and if you're lucky, you get 30 seconds on the news, if you're lucky. Otherwise, it doesn't get mentioned at all. I mean, it's just another statistic for the crime statistics, and that doesn't make the news.
No. I think the last one that really got big attention was 5 years ago. The dancer who came down from New York to perform for a World AIDS Day concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was hit with a lead pipe over on Avondale.
Yeah.
And that made a tremendous amount of noise. You know, visitor coming in, World AIDS Day, HSPVA was doing the Laramie Project at the same time. I know, because at that time, Q Patrol was still very active. And, you know, I had to somewhat come out to my boss a little more officially and say, I need to go because I'm getting calls for interviews on that. So that we could, you know, because people were wanting to know about this and what to do. It's weird seeing my car on television. I declare. But the fact is that, you know, these stuff does happen. They still occur. And they're not getting the attention. We don't have a weekly newspaper to cover these stories. We don't. Q Patrol right now is
non-existent.
Is it mothballed or?
It's mothballed. Yeah. Our equipment was stolen, and I couldn't. At that time that we kind of shuttered up, I was chairman of Q Patrol, and. I guess technically I still am because we never folded the organization. But, you know, the equipment was stolen, and I couldn't justify going to people and trying to raise money for new equipment when I didn't have people's hands to put the stuff into.
Right.
I couldn't go out and spend, you know, say I need $1,000. To cover, you know, the radio and, you know, a year for the equipment we need.
I mean, towards the end there, it was pulling teeth to get people to show up.
Yeah.
And that's sad. I mean, because Broussard proved that, you know, it's our lives at stake.
And Broussard wasn't the only person who was killed.
And Broussard is not the only person.
Yeah, there was a shoot. Someone was shot a couple days later.
Mm-hmm.
But Broussard was so horrific.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the one that stuck. It was the catalyst where finally this neighbor, this community stood up and said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to take it anymore.
I remember vividly the when the police did their somewhat short-lived sting operation. And I think that was the moment for them that opened some of their eyes. Because when somebody dumb enough to go after a, you know, an undercover cop and you know, then that cop ends up on national television telling people he never realized how bad we had it until he was attacked.
Yeah. And also part of that was the fact that the same person was being same quote unquote activist was being interviewed for it was local or national news when this happened that they, you know, this guy was went up to beat up, you know, a undercover cop pretending to be a homosexual walking the street, and the guy's defense was, look, I didn't know you were a cop, thought you were a fag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in 1991,
that was considered justification.
I have, there's something, you keep bringing up the activist thing, and I just, there's something I have to say because it's just screaming inside my head. We tend, people who are identified as activists, and I don't care what community it is, ours, black, Asian, whatever, I don't care. We tend to hold those people up as, you know, the voices of our community, the people who everybody goes to when somebody needs to speak for our community. And as much as I love our activists, both old and new, that does not mean that we always have to agree with the way they do their thing. I understand why, to an extent. I just feel like I don't have to agree with the way it gets handled, the way it gets put out there, and you know, I'd be more than happy to listen to any number of those people tell me how sorry they are for what happened. I'd be, you know, more than happy to hear that. And I'd be more than happy to, you know, feel like they've done their thing and they've learned from what had happened, what they had done. That doesn't mean I'm going to let them off the hook for what they have done. You know?
Yeah.
It is one thing to say, okay, we understand you've changed as a person. That doesn't mean I let you off the hook for it.
Right.
You know? You have done this thing. You can, you know, a good friend of mine taught me that you have control of everything you say or do until you have said it and done it. Then it has control of you. And this, as far as I am concerned, has control of each one of these guys for the rest of their lives.
They have to
live with
that. Because
it certainly has control of the mother of the person they killed.
Yeah.
For the rest of her life.
And for those of us here in the community.
And for those of us here in the community.
You know, I think what happens a lot is it's kind of a go-to with this. Once you find someone who's willing to stand up and say, I'm gay, here's what I think. There was a time when not many people would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who are willing to stand up and say that, their name gets put on a Rolodex.
Yeah.
And when something like that happens, you go to that source.
Right.
Right.
Unfortunately, some people wear a lot of hats. And some people forget which hat they're wearing at what time.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem. If you're given this, here, you got the wrong hat on, and the wrong microphone is put in front of you, I think that happens too often nowadays.
The bad thing is that there is no one, at least that I've seen, that's as vocal as this activist has been for so many years. I don't see anyone stepping up to say, okay, you've done this long enough, let someone else do it. You know?
Dear sir, the time is 14:59. Your 15 minutes are up.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to pass the mantle on to someone else who will be as vociferous, who will be as loud, and let people know that we are still here and that we're not going to take it.
I can remember the one thing I remember oh so vividly feeling, and I feel it, and part of it is what made the person who's sitting here today, is that I got angry. I was like, because that was my coming out process to the rest of the world. I mean, I'd been out to myself since I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my coming out to a community. That was my period of, this is, hey, ready to join the, you know, group. And it was, and seeing that and hearing that and knowing what had been done, I got angry. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Not only am I out, but I'm going to be out and I'm going to be loud about it when I see what is being done and still to this day is being done to us.
I think what the problem is we have nowadays, it's, I've said it before, this is activism nowadays.
Yeah.
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 If you can't do it with the click of a mouse, it's not worth doing.
Yeah.
The other problem we have is complacency.
Which is why I don't own a computer.
And we have complacency in the community that, oh, well, it's okay to come out and party and have a good time and walk to my car and no one's going to harass me. People are complacent.
Yeah.
The other thing is apathy. Okay? We're so wrapped up in, you know, Crystal and, you know, the scene and looking good and going out and partying and all this, you know, we forget, hey, the minute you walk out that bar, whether it be at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, midnight, closing, whenever, okay, there are people out there. They might look like some street hustler. They might look like, you know, someone really dressed really nice. But somebody is out there somewhere waiting. Okay? They're waiting for the wrong person to step into their path. They're waiting for somebody who's not paying attention. Okay? And we forget that when we walk out of that bar at night.
I sometimes forget that a lot, and it's because of the fact that I'm so young and coming out and everything, and I really never really noticed it until these kind of things happen, and they never really say anything about statistics until somebody is actually dead. And I never really noticed it until I kind of recently, not super recent, I saw it on the news that I think it was a trans hooker or something died at a bus stop that I usually stay at, and it scared me so much. I was like,
I
could have been there that day.
Yep. And the thing, too, is that, you know, it isn't so much being aware of your surroundings, but having groups like Q Patrol make sure that we do get to our car safely, and then we do get where we're going safely. You know, and it's sad that we don't have groups like Q Patrol.
And Ozzy wanted to jump in here.
Well, I think it also has to do with the relative lack of information in the scene, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times all you ever hear advertised is, you know, what's going on, and there's nothing else. I mean, there's the general how to be safe with each other, but there's also, you need to talk more about how to be safe when you're out going from place to place.
I'll give you the how to be safe story. You're going to hear the basic how to be safe story in the Montrose. They're going to be telling you this in about a month's time on every local station, because when you get ready to go shopping for Christmas, they're going to tell you the same thing. Head up, on a swivel, keys in your hand,
keys
ready.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. The first 2 years that I came down to the Montrose to go to the bars, now, I was a cheap bastard. I wouldn't pay for parking.
Yeah.
I would park Avondale, even further away. And I, first thing, as soon as I got out of my car, I put the keys in my hand in an aggressive manner, and it was sitting in my pocket until I got to Pacific Street. That's the way I carried myself the first couple of years when I started going out to the clubs, because I was that concerned after hearing
this
stuff.
If you got to carry your keys like they're a set of claws between your fingers, you do it. Because, you know, person who attacks you ain't going to think about using something that's real sharp. And, you know, and you can do a whole hell of a lot of damage. As somebody who's trying to hurt you.
And pay for parking.
Pay
you're going to spend on parking what you're going to spend for one, maybe two drinks. Consider it an insurance policy.
Yep.
A, your car is going to be there when you get back. It's probably not going to be vandalized. And it's in a well-lit area.
The other thing is that, you know, if you really want to ensure your safety, I would recommend paying the exorbitant amount of money for a valet. Because, you know, I mean, you'll know that your car is at least safe.
Yeah.
And you won't have to walk back to the parking lot
mm-hmm.
or your parking space.
And don't get so stinking drunk or, God forbid, you know, it doesn't happen there, high that you can't figure out where the hell you're going.
Exactly.
The Montrose does not have good lighting, has sidewalks where there are sidewalks, have tree roots growing up through them, so they're not uneven.
I know.
People won't cut back their shrubs.
Montrose was a state-of-the-art design circa 1907. This is 2007, people.
You have to be careful out there.
The
and, you know,
thing, too, is that if you don't feel like you have the capacity to even get out to your car and drive home, tell your bartender or somebody that works there, hey, I need a cab. You know? It's that simple. They'll call you a cab. Hell, some places will actually pay for it. You know?
Because if you're drunk and you get out in your car and get into an accident, they're liable.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So some of them will do that.
I personally don't think it is a wise thing in this day and age, no matter who you are, to go out and party alone.
No.
I don't. And you know, I think everybody should have that designator, what I call a designated hitter.
No.
I mean, the person who you whine, bitch, and moan about wanting to get into your car, even you are so far
frelin'
gone that you can't see straight. They should knock you on your happy queer ass, take your keys, and throw your butt in the back of their car or into a cab and tell the driver this is his, her, or its address.
Yeah.
And I mean, because we, yeah, it's nice to have the feeling of freedom of going out and having a good time. But in your freedom comes other people's opportunity.
Yep,
ma'am.
Other people's opportunity to cause harm.
Yeah.
And there are people out there who think it's their right, you know, that, you know, everybody else, whatever their issue is, you know, everybody else just has to be a target because they got issues. And they won't think about it. They'll just go after you because you're an easy mark.
I'll tell you one thing. If I'm walking somewhere and it's dead silent, I hear a leaf drop. I turn around and see who the hell is behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. The slightest noise, anything. If I'm walking somewhere and I hear it, I'm going to turn around and see what the hell it is. You know, and 9 times out of 10, people don't do that. You know, they're too complacent.
I'd say it's from even nowadays, you know, with doing stuff with Q Patrol. You know, I hear a siren go off here, a police or ambulance siren here in the Montrose. I look like a dog. I'm going, okay, where's it coming from? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
my head's like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What direction is that coming from? And is it anywhere near the bars? Is it, you know,
what
the hell, you know?
But, you know, I asked before. I don't know what this community would take to, what it's going to take to get the community to rise up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I posted this stuff on a couple of websites. I didn't get much interest on it.
Yeah.
Of people who are wanting to know about this. But I don't know.
The thing about that was that when you post stuff on websites, you have to really make it a vital issue or something. Otherwise, people, quite frankly, they just don't give a care or anything. They're not going to care unless it has to do with them. If it impacts home, then they're going to care.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. I think it could be more, you know, some of the stuff could be generational. Some of the people here are the former activists who, you know, don't beat the street but click their their mouths.
But the thing is that those activists need to take those that want to take action and show them how to make noise other than clicking the mouse and saying, well, this is how... No. Get them out there. Get them to beat the grass and, you know, pound the pavement and make the noise so people will realize we're still here, okay? And we're not going to take somebody just getting off the slap on the hand.
You know, for the longest time on this show, we used to talk about a group that taught people how to be AIDS activists in their own defense. And I think... And I can completely understand that there comes a saturation point where the older generation, the ACT UP and Queer Nation generation, and those before that get tired. They've been through the mill, and they get tired, and it's like, and they just want to say enough.
Well, yeah, I have to face it that
if they do that, then they need then. Before they decide to call it a day, they need to teach another generation to be who they were.
Yeah. I have to admit that our being a relatively young movement that the queer community is, the problem is that our pioneers in it are quite frankly tired or dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we lost an entire generation of
and
them.
And that's the sad truth. And it's I'm of that younger generation that need to step up. The generation below, the ones below us, there, the hatchlings, they we need to get that activism stepped up,
right?
Unfortunately we've become too Will and Grace.
Yeah, to Will and Grace, to Queer as Folk, and...
Well, at least Queer as Folk showed there was bashings.
Yeah.
Give them that much.
I have a dear, sweet friend who is all of 23. And he is at least aware. He is at least willing... when he sees something that needs to be said or done, when somebody who was making obnoxious statements about queers came to his campus, he went off. I mean, they were out there, and he had friends, and out they came to be the opposing side. The problem is we need more people like him who are willing to say no.
And I'll tell you this, I'm having real struggles with that right now. With where I'm working and my situation I'm in, I'm really back in the closet at work.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for some companies that had domestic, had policies that didn't have to worry about that. And I was more open and more out about it.
Mm-hmm.
The place where I'm at now, I've had to sit there and take so much, but I am slowly trying to come out to these people, just subtly, and go, hey, guess what? Imagine talking a little bit about the Paul Broussard case, sanitizing it for Tomball, Texas. I did that with one of my coworkers on Friday.
Yeah,
I mentioned that case because this and some other stuff really put me in a knot this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say something.
Yeah.
And
I know that I as someone who doesn't have the regular 9-to-5 and doesn't have to deal with a whole heap and hell of a lot of straight people who are close-minded straight people. I know plenty of straight people but most of them know me and like me, so therefore they have to be open-minded because after all these years of living here,
and everything that I had to go through, everything that I watched other people I care about go through to be out of the closet. There's not an iceberg's chance in hell of anybody or any situation ever putting me back in the closet.
Yeah.
I mean, and I won't do it. I won't do it for a political party ranting on, you know, and taking over, you know, or any religious organization.
Yeah.
Guess what? We're here. And, you know, and guess what? We're still queer.
Ain't nothing gonna change that, not any.
Yeah. All right. I think we've gone on this topic enough and sombered ourselves up enough. But first thing to do is be aware. Look at the stories. Mm-hmm. Find out what's going on. You know, you can put in Paul Broussard into a search engine. It's P-A-U-L. Last name is B-R-O-U-S-S-A-R-D, and get information. Mm-hmm. You can put in stuff about John Bice. That's J-O-N. Last name is B-U-I-C-E, and get the stories on this.
Mm-hmm.
And go to different sources. Don't rely on what you hear. Don't anyone take anything you hear, read, on first glance, without taking a teaspoon of salt.
If we do not stand up for ourselves first, yeah, how do we expect anybody else to?
Let's go to a bit of music, then we'll come back with the fun roundtable.
Yeah.
You're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude.
But I don't feel like dancing when you don't tell me to play. My heart could take a chance, but my two feet can't find a way. You think that I could muster up the little stuff to get away? But I don't feel like dancing, no sir, no dancing today. Don't feel like dancing, dancing. Women never find the best to do. Don't feel like dancing, dancing. We can sing when I'm having the mood.
Scissor Sisters with I Don't Feel Like Dancing from their second CD, Ta-Da. So let everyone know you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. If you want to get in touch with us here on the show, you can send us a, excuse me, a snail mail at After Hours, care of KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, that's L-O-V-E-T-T, Houston, Texas, 77006. We also take emails at afterhours@kpft.org. And we love hearing from everyone out there who's listening here. Love mail, hate mail, news stories, upcoming events, dirty pictures. Throw in your two cents worth. That's what this show's about, is...
Chris, you got any dirty pictures?
We're on the air right now.
Virgin, watch your mouth.
You can take some dirty pictures with me later.
I want to see some dirty pictures.
Okay, give them some of the language he was spouting after the microphones went off. He shouldn't talk. But okay.
I should have taken him to that
website.
No, to they're the still there.
Should have taken Virgin over to the Houston Leather Boys dog wash earlier. And maybe they could have referred him to Snap and saved us a lot of trouble. Spay and neuter animal project.
Oh, I would have probably had fun with that. What are you talking about?
All right, let's get into some better, some little happier news. As we said at the beginning of the show, J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, has confirmed the rumors. Albus Dumbledore, Master Wizard and Headmaster of Hogwarts, is gay.
Oh my God!
Oh, but what about the fan fiction?
That's what she said. Oh my God! Were you reading it from here? Just guessing. Okay. Yeah, I have to go check that out. Nifty.org. Probably some very interesting.
Gotta love Slash. Anyhow,
I still love the one that had the two princes, where it was Prince Harry and Harry Potter. Actually, they refer to it as Harry Pothead and Harry Potter. That was a good story. But she announced, she outed him at a Q&A session. She was asked by one fan whether Dumbledore finds true love. Dumbledore is gay, the author responded to gasps and applause.
Yeah.
And she explained that Dumbledore was smitten with rival Gellert Grindelwald, whom he defeated long ago in a battle between good and bad wizards. Oh, God, it's all the Madonna complex. Falling in love can blind us to an extent, Rowling said of Dumbledore's feelings, adding that Dumbledore was horribly, terribly let down.
Sounds like any other bad relationship.
So,
you know, I realized that Richard Harris had to go off and die.
But who's Richard Harris?
The guy who played the first Dumbledore.
Okay.
But I'm sorry. If they really wanted to make it a seamless transition into a new Dumbledore, then he should have been wearing the same costume the original Dumbledore wore, number one. And number two, I don't like the guy who's playing the new Dumbledore. He just irritates me.
Who's it?
His name's Michael Gambon.
Oh, okay.
And he's... But, I mean, why are people concerned with the sexual orientation of a 300-year-old wizard.
I was
I just
a
saying
fictional
that
character.
Just, of a fictional character who never once gets laid during the course of the books, first of all.
None of them got laid.
I mean, nobody gets laid in this, you know, I mean, but... Why?
The closest thing you get to any of the characters in the Harry Potter series getting laid was when Robot Chicken did a spin-off. We must defeat Puberus.
You can rub always count on Robot Chicken to, you know.
Rub the stone. It only works three times. Then you've got to let it rest for 24 hours. Sometimes five if you... But then again, that had Samuel L. Jackson playing Dumbledore.
Now somebody tells me Daniel Radcliffe has come at it. Then we have something to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But until then.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm still waiting for the real pictures from Equus. But then again, he's coming to perform here in New York when it comes here.
Yay.
Now for an honor that I know Jimmy is so hoping he gets. A proposed toilet honoring gay playwright Joe Orton raises a stink.
Given where Joe Orton died, that seems appropriate.
From the What We Just Don't Need department. New public toilets be constructed in London's famous Camden Passage Antiques Market are causing controversy after Mike Whedon, a member of the association, suggested they be named for murdered gay playwright Joe Orton.
Ooh.
Orton, who wrote and lived in the market's location, Islington, was beaten to death in a jealous rage there by his lover. Whedon suggested the toilets be named after Orton because he was known to frequent public toilets in the area looking for sex.
Oh my God, he should be
totally inappropriate.
That's
Orton.
And that's why in America we call those Johns. Anyhow,
well, over there it's called.
You didn't know Larry Craig.
In England, they're called
cottagings.
Don't even go there with that Larry Craig thing.
I'm sure we'll get some furious reactions.
Anyhow.
I'm sure I'll get some furious reactions, but I've been told by people who knew Joe Orton that he would have loved the idea. I think having a toilet with a blue plaque dedicated to him would suit him personally. Joe Orton did what he did because it was the only place you could do it in those days. I think having a bog... another name for a toilet named after him would show how attitudes have changed over the last 40 years. We wouldn't be celebrating cottaging, we'd be celebrating how much more liberal we are these days. We can get Gary Oldman, who played Joe in the film, to come and unveil the plaque.
I have a question. Would you be using that toilet?
If we did that for Jimmy, would it have to be made out of pink porcelain? With rhinestones around the, you know, yeah. And a little bit of...
He publicly asked he wants to have a public toilet named after him.
Oh, Jimmy does?
Yeah, the Jimmy Carper Memorial...
And it'll have to be pink. It'll just have to be pink. We love you, Jimmy.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
I got a feeling that after our second segment we had, or the first half of the round table, Jimmy may not be listening to the second half of the show. I may be getting a phone call from him.
Get his bathroom plaque.
I don't know. Jimmy, although he has cringed on many an occasion on some of the things that have been said in his absence over the years, has never had a problem with somebody stating their opinion. The way some of us have done it over the years is another issue. But...
This lovely little story out of San Francisco.
Oh,
figure.
Yeah.
Archbishop apologizes for giving communion to gays dressed as nuns.
What? This is the Halloween mass.
It was a typical Sunday mass until two men in heavy makeup and nuns' habits received Holy Communion from San Francisco's top Catholic official.
The only reason they could tell they weren't nuns is the makeup.
On October 7th, Archbishop George Niederauer delivered the Eucharist to members of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. An activist group whose motto is "Go forth and sin some more," prompting cries of outrage from conservatives across the country and Catholics in San Francisco.
In response to a request for comment, the Archbishop released a letter of apology addressed to Catholics of the Archdiocese of San Francisco and Catholics at large, in which he said he didn't realize his mistake until after the Mass of the Most Holy Redeemer Church in the Castro District. At communion time, towards the end of the line, two strangely dressed persons came to receive communion. As I recall, one of them wore a large flowered hat or garland. It looks like it's a wig.
To quote from an old movie, what was this guy, a cardinal? What was
Archbishop.
He? Archbishop. Sir, you, sir, are an idiot. You couldn't tell those were guys. Okay.
Now, apparently what it is, he's new. So, he said, although he's familiar with the group because of its actions and had been condemned by his predecessors, he never encountered any of the group's members until that Sunday.
Well, you gotta break them in sometime.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what he said to the server. These two people have long made a practice of mocking the Catholic Church in general and religious women in particular. Someone who dresses in mock religious habit to attend Mass does so to make a point that is intended to be a provocative gesture. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, founded in San Francisco in 1979, are known for their white face paint, outrageous costumes, theatrics, and support of the gay community. They adopt names such as Sister Chastity Boner, Sister Constance Craving of the Holy Desire, and have such mottos as, it is not wise to say no to free drinks, cheap jewelry, discount cosmetics, or pretty boys.
I think that pretty boy thing we could probably go along with.
Sister Barbie Mitzvah, who serves as the board's chair nun and secretary, said Tuesday the group is not offering a comment. The people are always after us, Sister Mitzvah says, referring to conservative pundits and Catholic leaders. The group did not identify the two members who took the wafers. One of the men, however, sent an email to the church after the Mass and gave the name Sister Delta Goodhand.
Oh, my God. And when somebody screams, oh, God, at that service, make sure there's condoms involved.
I think it's only in the baptismal.
Remember, this was a Roman Catholic church in the Castro District. The most Holy Redeemer Church. And like I said, if you go to sfgate.com and do a search for this, you'll find pictures. And not just pictures.
Did
you'll find video.
A church full of straight people? On Castro?
I don't know. He must have been so delusional he figured it was Castro. He's going to find a bunch of Cuban refugees.
Yeah, right. Oh, Lord.
But how in the hell he got that confused, I don't know.
Yeah, pictures?
But if you go to fsgate.com, you will find...
Is that SF Gate?
Huh?
SF Gate?
SF. Okay. San Francisco Gate.
All right.
Let's see here. Let's trying to find, see if we've got some other story here we can talk about really quick on here. Anyone else want to throw out something while I'm staring here? I thought there was something.
You know, it is almost Halloween, which means it is almost the high holy day of most queers.
Yeah.
especially if you live in Greenwich Village, because they do have one of the darned largest parades ever. Yeah, they have a whole big parade and stuff.
Going to fuck these dead white children.
The
Wigstock.
Yes. You see, it's one of those days when pagans and queers have something in common. It is a high holy day.
Now, when you're both, it's the best.
Yeah. Then when you're both, oh, hell.
Let's see.
I do love this time of year.
Don't we all?
We need to find at least something cute story here.
Yeah. And we're actually finally having, like, weather that you can breathe in.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, the downside is, you know, usually it's our Halloween show that's a longer show.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the wonderful Congress screwing around with daylight saving time, it's actually the following week where we get our 5-hour show. Our 5-hour.
You know, or they could just do away with the whole thing altogether, because it's not like it truly affects any of that process, any of the processes for which it was invented originally.
Not to mention, we're the only country that does it. I mean,
no, we're not.
No, we are just one or two others.
There's other places that do it.
I mean, why do it all? It does is just screw up our internal clocks and everything.
What's really sad is that in a country that adheres to such a thing, there's at least one state that doesn't.
Indiana.
That really can confuse the issue.
Ah, okay, here's a QC, one little last thing of, you know, since we're talking about crime and punishment.
Something to get.
Yeah. Ooh, crime
something
and
to remember it.
Here's a case where I think, you know, they're a little overboard. A West Scranton woman could face up to 90 days in jail and a fine of $300 for allegedly shouting profanities at an overflowing toilet. But wait, there's more. While inside her home.
What? Oh my God.
I shout profanities at George Bush all the time, and he's an overflowing toilet.
Now, you need to apologize to a commode for that.
Yeah, that's giving commodes a bad name. Anyhow.
Dawn Herb, whose potty mouth caught the attention of an off-duty police officer, was charged with disorderly conduct, prompting her to fire off a letter to the editor in order to fight the charge. It doesn't make any sense. I was in my home. It wasn't like I was outside or drunk. A cop can charge you with disorderly conduct for disrespecting them? Or her children, she's saying. The obscenities hit the fan when battling your toilet overflowing at 8 p.m. Although Mrs. Herb doesn't exactly recall what she said, she admitted she was frustrated and let more than a few choice words fly. Unfortunately, it was near an open bathroom window.
Oops.
The toilet was overflowing and leaking into the kitchen. I'm yelling for my daughter to get a mop. A guy is yelling, "Shut the F up!" And I yell back, "Mind your own business!" Her next-door neighbor, a police officer who was off-duty, apparently had enough of her foul mouth and asked her to keep it down. When she didn't stop, he called the police. Pussy.
When you have a toilet... I've had toilets blow up on me before. And let me tell you, you try to keep a civil tongue in your mouth as that's making a mess of your hallway.
Yeah. Right. It's flying into her kitchen. The citation accused the defendant of using obscene language or gestures with intent to cause public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm, or recklessly creating a risk.
Police officer, why don't you take those little... complaint and shove it, please.
Or sit on your taser gun.
Please sit on your taser.
The use of obscene language or gestures is an offense under state criminal code, but cursing at a police officer isn't a punishable offense, the ACLU. But then you also have to realize this is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It cannot be the basis for a citation. You cannot prosecute someone for wearing a cop or for swearing at a cop or a toilet.
Of course, this is the land of the Amish and the Amish, you know, who...
Okay, you're talking...
For whom dam is, you know...
Yeah. You're talking about Pennsylvania, where you can't drink a beer in your front yard. And if you're smoking in a car with someone under the age of 14, you can get a ticket.
What the...
hell? Okay, that's why I'm glad we don't live there.
Yeah.
Is that why you moved, Chris?
No, I dragged here kicking and screaming as a young child. And been making my family's life a living hell ever since. You've been listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston. Real quick, last shout-outs.
Good night, y'all. Good night.
Much love. Blessed be. Much love. See you next time.
And see you next week, y'all.
And now, your PSAs.
KPFT brings back the fall concert series at the Miller Outdoor Theater starting this Sunday, October 14th, and will continue every Sunday afternoon through November 18th from 4 to 7. Admission is free.
Come out and meet your favorite KPFT radio personalities and experience the diverse sounds from your community radio station.
Again, the fall concert series begins this Sunday, October 14th through November 18th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Miller Outdoor Theater, and admission is free. For more information, visit kpft.org.
This program is sponsored by the City of Houston through the Miller Outdoor Theater Advisory Board. 90.1 KPFT Houston, your community radio station.
The Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is now holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's five signal areas. Our governance model is unique. Pacifica's listeners and volunteers compose our local and national boards of directors. Our voting system is also unique. This format, called single transferable voting, is a voting system in which voters each have one vote but rank candidates in order of choice. In a single transferable vote election, candidates must achieve a threshold of first choice votes to win. For those without an overall majority of first choices, candidates with the fewest votes are eliminated one by one. Ballots cast for those candidates are then recounted for the next choice candidate until the winner achieves a majority among remaining candidates. With single transferable voting, voters have the power to rank candidates by choice rather than simply choosing a single candidate. For more information about single transferable voting, also known as instant runoff voting, visit fairvote.org and get that ballot in the mail.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.